don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Welcome back to the so-called Weaker Podcast. Gavin Cooney back presenting this week. Very happy to confirm the football is indeed alive. In my absence last week, Maurice Brosnan and Mick McCarthy declared that the sport was, in fact, dead. So I am interested to hear how they're all feeling about it now.
I think that hurling will be the real winner this weekend.
Said like a true hurling snob.
Most diplomatic.
I don't think we declared the game dead, Gavin. I think that's unfair.
Okay.
I think what we did was have a long conversation about a poor first week in the Super 8s. Said that this week would be a lot better. We're proven right. But also decided that there are a lot of boring aspects about the current product of Gaelic football, as there are in all sports and as there are in any matchup that might happen. No, plenty of boring games in hurling too. And we said, what about a couple of rule changes that might stop this from happening as regularly as it does? We weren't ever suggesting that there would be no such thing as a good game or that it would never happen again. And we were actually fully expecting it. So I think I stand by our show last week. I think it's a good listen. I think you should go back and listen to the whole thing, including an in-depth conversation about the club, the plight of the club player.
Great. Mark Farley's not here because he literally choked on his words from last week, so at least he had the decency to do that. Just before we get into the show today, we're speaking to Paul Cody, he of the Carlow Hurlers. It's not been a great year for Kilkenny, out of the championship, lost the Leinster final, and they've been dealt a body blow this year by the news that their number one fan, Eamon Dunphy, is no longer on television. It's all over.
No. So not only is the Kilkenny run of, this is going to be 3 years not winning an All-Ireland under Brian Cody for the first time, not only is that era coming to an end, but the era of them being lauded in the face of poor performing footballers is over too. So how are we ever going to know that the Kilkenny Hurlers are in fact the Henry Shefflins, the DJ Careys, and these guys? How are we ever going to know that they're the people that we should aspire to being and not these, you know, footballers who don't play on the streets?
Shefflin might have to say it himself.
Yeah. Shefflin will have to say that. How come these lads are not like the Henry Shefflins?
There is one obvious fix for your problem. And that's where you put Eamon Dunphy on the Sunday game, which I'm sure you'd be a massive fan of, Morris.
Yeah, oh yeah, the a holy trinity of Brawley, Dunphy and Spillane, that would just be delightful. I think, like, there is something to be said for, you know, not to encourage, like, there's this kind of tolerance of, you know, inaccuracy for the sake of entertainment that just I find baffling. Like, you can apply that to any aspects you want, but particularly in sport, like regardless of the consequences, I just think that style of punditry might not buy what the Sunday game needs right now.
Okay.
So they've got plenty of it. Now, my take on it would be the Sunday game is, the most famous people on the Sunday games, including people that I admire greatly, are basically known for a kind of a blowhard attitude to their analysis.
Yeah.
I'm saying is that there's never been anybody better at any sport at doing that type of analysis than Dunphy. And because it doesn't rely heavily on actual tactical nous or understanding of the game, then why not transfer him over? Now, unfortunately, he has left RTE in general. But, you know, I'm saying maybe he's what Sky needs.
I was just going to say.
You know, Sky have really good analysis as it is. Maybe they need a little bit of kind of wild man.
Or, indeed, TG Carr.
Oh, yeah. Dunphy Oscailge.
I mean,
Henry Shefflins, na DJ Careys, na Johnny Murtis. Johnny Murtina.
Ah! Here on DJ Carey, we'll move off Dunphy a minute because I'm sure everyone's sick of listening about him all the week, apart from maybe me. I mean, he did have an infamous moment involving DJ Carey on TV.
So do you want me to tell the story?
Yeah, I think you're the best place to tell it.
I want to preface this by saying that me and Gavin have talked about this already. I, having listened to, especially to Malcolm Gladwell's podcast recently, if anybody's heard it, no longer trust my memory on this one. And it's something that I've told many, many times over the years, so much so that I'm not 100% sure what the original was, because I've never seen proof of this. I just remember watching it on a Saturday night long ago before an All-Ireland final in whatever year that Dunphy had his TV show, around maybe 2003 kind of time, was it? So Kilkenny are in an All-Ireland final on the Sunday. He's on the Friday night, actually. And apparently a story is going to be in the Sunday papers about DJ Carey and his personal life. That story is kind of going around, but it hasn't been out there yet. Dunphy has an All-Ireland panel in which he talks about the virtues of the great Kilkenny team and the great Cork team, and he loves hurling and it's everything football isn't, you know, and all this kind of thing, because everybody hates their own patch, and it's an amazing thing. And then he turns to the camera and said, and for the people listening out there, and the people, you know who you are. Don't shame this country. Don't do what you're going to do. Don't do it. Don't shame this country. I'm paraphrasing from my memory, as I said. One of the great moments of all time. Everybody in the world, pre kind of like internet on your phone kind of era, everybody desperately tries to find out what he's talking about. The story gets bigger than it ever was and doesn't appear in the Sunday papers.
Did it not appear in
the not that I can remember.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that little postscript to it at all.
Yeah. So that's what happened there.
Right. That's enough. If you do want more of Eamon Dunphy, why not listen?
Shame this country.
If you do want more of Eamon Dunphy, listen in to the Reducer podcast this week. That's another podcast we have here on the Bulls Network, where me and Seamus O'Reilly will be going through some of Dunphy's most famous punditry moments. But this is the so-called Weaker podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast by searching Bulls.ie podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts on your Android feed. Please do subscribe to the show and give us a rating and a comment, or indeed a review. It'll fly us up those iTunes charts and we'll all feel very good about ourselves. Now, Morris, you've been speaking to Paul Cody.
I have, yeah. I know people are probably sick of hearing us talk about why the Donegal Hurling Cup should stay as six teams and deserves more promotion. So I thought I'd let a player say the exact same thing. I suppose the one kind of main takeaway, like, Paul is great on a lot of things, but one of the main takeaways is, like, we kind of bemoaned and pointed out the lack of coverage and did our own bit here, but like the never really was it talked about what the consequence of that is. Like, it's just kind of, you know, this deserves promotion because it's entertaining or because it's great or it's a good competition, but like, Paul's major concern is how are they going to sustain or even improve Carlow Hurling, and his fear is that because Carlow Town right now is no senior hurling club, and because of that and because of a lack of promotion, there's no real inspiration for people to get involved in hurling within the county. So kids don't turn on a Sunday game on a Sunday night and see Carlow Hurlers. So that there's no, like, if anything, maybe they do see Carlow footballers, and there's six Carlow senior teams in the Carlow Town for football. But that kind of lack, like the lack of promotion has a consequence for counties beyond just them not getting their names in a headline, or, you know, this isn't really, like, if anything, it's a totally unselfish attitude. It's the fact that promotion is so important to help the game grow. And that's, like, we keep talking about, oh, we really want to see the game grow. And ultimately, it's going to come down to that kind of thing, that we would see a more competitive hurling championship.
Brilliant. Well, let's listen to that chat now.
It's back once again by a no McGrath. Back once again, it comes here to the number two. Back once again to Conor Loftus. Once again through one marker to another. But back once again. Back once again there to Brian Stack. One back once again here. Back once again to Philly McMahon this time. There's a chance for Mayor now just to build it from the back once again. Back once again towards Kieran Kilkenny. Back once again. Back once again. Back once again.
Come here, last time we spoke was just after the league final, and you were telling me that was one of the proudest days in a Carlow jersey you've had in a while. It wasn't about a couple of months after that.
No, so I haven't really put into context too much yet, but things went well. Our goal at the start of the year, you know, was to win the league and to win to Joe McDonagh. And I'd say realistically at the start of the year, if you told me you'd take one, you would have took one. So to win two is definitely very satisfactory. I think ourselves, Westmead, you know, Kerry, we all would have had the same goal, but to actually go and win the two of them, and I suppose winning the league, you know, if you went and won the league and lost the Donegal Donegal, they might say, you know, they were a bit fitter earlier in the year, or they weren't as well prepared. Other teams might not be well prepared in the year, but you know, they're better hurlers come summer. So I suppose it was nice to be able to, you know, to win the league in the early months of March and produce, and then go into the summer and hurl well in the summer and show that, you know, that there is good hurlers, really good hurlers in Carlow too.
Yeah, I mean, I know you had a bit of, you were kind of apprehensive about how the Joe McDonough as a format would go. Like, were you happy with it as a competition overall?
Yeah, I was just obviously thinking about that today when we were on talk, and just regarding the Joe McDonough, it was an excellent competition. I think we in Carlow, I'd say if you talk to the other players involved in the county that were in the competition, definitely enjoyed it too, I'd say, because I think there were 15 matches, and I counted today, there was, I think, 9 of them were 4 points or down, you know, like, so 3 out of 5 matches were all very, very close matches. Like, there was only 4 points or less in 9 of those matches. So, like, there was very little in the teams there. So, like, there was a real level playing field. And you know, it was nice to be going out every week and facing into another match that was going to be really, really competitive. The only thing that I would say on the Joe McDonough, like, and I'm sure yourself, you can see it from the outside, like, the promotion or the coverage towards Joe McDonough was shite. Like, it was. You would, excuse the language, we don't have to say anything else. Like, that would have been nice if I had got a little bit more promotion or coverage, because, you know, there was really, really good hurling games. And I suppose regarding who could make a statement that actually people in GA might believe, I was thinking about it later, like Liam Sheedy, it was involved with Antrim, I think Brendan Cummins was involved with Kerry, like, and I suppose they're well regarded in the GA, and they have spoken up a small bit about the Joe McDonough and the quality of games and the lack of coverage. So, you know, I suppose the more night, the better, realistically.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was actually in at the final, one of the few people who saw it, because it wasn't televised. And Westmead, that GA, I don't know if you saw that, actually took the televising some of their games live on their own Facebook because they got no coverage. Like, as a player, what kind of impact does that have? Like, you know, the just the sheer lack of coverage.
Yeah, so there's just two answers for one, where the only thing that matters is, you know, hurling and the result. But, like, not the honest answer, I suppose. Like, it's, you know, like, it is great to be hurling for your county, and, you know, we all go back, like, we don't do it for the coverage, but, like, My issue is my real issue is that, right, there's now at the moment, there's 4 senior hurling clubs in Carlow. Okay, there was 6, there was 8 maybe 10 years ago, and now there's 4 this year going forward. So something has to change dramatically in Carlow, or this good year will all be wiped out in about 5 years' time. So there's young people in Carlow who, you know, imagine that they kicked on the Sunday game on a Sunday evening at 9 o'clock, and they were talking about other Carlow, like Carlow senior hurlers, you know, James Dale, Chris Nolan, the Raptors scoring and highlighting what they were doing. And young lads in Carlow were watching that or watching their matches on the Sunday game, and they're getting a little bit of coverage. It doesn't have to be much, but they're getting more than they are. Like, it would do so much for hurling in Carlow. And, like, take the teams that are in the Joe McDonough, Kerry need the promotion of hurling. Westmead need the promotion of hurling. Antrim want the promotion of hurling. So does Leash. And Mead need the promotion of hurling. Like, it's, like, the promotion of hurling doesn't need to be in Kilkenny and these counties. Like, you know, that's there, like, in Kilkenny and Tipperary, these big counties. Like, it's us that are, like, fighting and losing battle a lot of the time, and it's really frustrating. So if we could get, you know, 20% more promotion, and then it would do on toll for hurling in the county, because, you know, I'm, it's a really good time for hurling in Carlow at the moment, but I'm very apprehensive for the future.
It's funny you say that. I was actually thinking that last time we spoke, you mentioned there's no hurling in Carlow town, and I was wondering, like, it's obviously been a great year, and I know you spoke about you'd never seen kind of the colour around the county until this year. Like, is that that kind of thing about maintaining that? Like, what the work that needs to be done on the ground, what would your thoughts on that be? Like, what needs to happen from here?
So, yeah, like, this is something I do lay in bed and think about at night, what can we do? Like, so unfortunately, this year, Naybreda and Bangorstown, two big areas, have gone down intermediate in the senior club championship. So, as I said, we have four teams. And then in the in Carrolltown, where there's five or six football clubs, there's not one hurling team. So, like, in Carlow, as senior hurlers now, I mean, we all have a responsibility to get around to these areas. And we were up in Carrolltown and the Satanta hurling club there with the young kids, and it was amazing that there were 60 or 70 kids there, and there were seven or eight of the senior hurlers there, and like, they all, it was a really positive night. And just like, that's a night the young lads will never forget. So I suppose as players, we need to get around to as much of the county as we can. The county board need to do as much as they can between, you know, development officers appointing them and get hurling going in areas and get national schools. And then I suppose all that would be in vain if there isn't help from the outside in the GA. Like, I don't know, like, the statistics, but, you know, I think in 2016 or something, Dublin had 1.4 million in development officers and Carlow had 178,000. Like, I'd rather see those numbers reversed. And it was the opposite way, because it's us that need them. It's Carlow, the counties outside, is, you know, the ones that are really succeeding at the moment that need the development, or else the gap is just widening. I suppose we need to put a 12-month plan in place, you know, a 24-month plan, a 5-year plan, and a 10-year plan. Like, my aspirations would be that in 10 years' time, to be Bangorstown would be back up senior, Naybreda back up senior, Carlow Town then would have a senior, would be back up senior from intermediate, and then Burren Rangers are a club that have been developed recently, that they're up to minor at the moment, and they will continue to grow and have a junior team, and that they would be senior. And then you'd have eight clubs, and there's one or two more. Like, if Carlow hurling is to ever break into the top 10, say, or in to make a proper impact, and with the elite counties, you need more than four clubs, and I think Tipperary have 28 senior clubs. And like, if we're picking with our own club this year, Monaster Rangers, there was 11 with the county panel. Like, you know, it's great for the club, but it's not foreseeable for the future, because, you know, that won't happen every year. So, like I said, I'm a little unsure what we can do, but something needs to be done.
Yeah.
In my eyes, anyway, with hurling.
Just on, you mentioned as well, breaking into the top 10. Like, obviously next year, now you're under the current rules, you're going to be up in Leinster next year. Like, as kind of as a player and as a team, what are your feelings about that? Like, would you be optimistic? Like, have you discussed it?
A little bit. The Limerick match was a big disappointment, and like, my initial feeling for the last 2 weeks after the Limerick match have been more so disappointed with the Limerick match than looking back on a great year. To tell you the truth, I've been so disappointed with that. People tell you that Norby, I'd be so grumpy that I wouldn't see the good in things half time. But in time, we look back, it was a great year. But just on that point, I'm just saying that when we played Limerick, you know, we felt good going into it. I know we only had a 6-day turnaround, and we enjoyed ourselves at the win in Joe McDonough. But when we played Limerick, there was a massive difference there in every way, I think. Physically, the speed of the hurling, and like, the thing that's hit me at the moment is we're after improving so much in the past 24 months in Carlow compared to where I've been for the last 8 years with the county. And then you played Limerick, and then again, scratching the head thinking, my God, like, how far have we just been to go? How many steps are on this ladder? Because we're only halfway there. If we're climbing a ladder, in my eyes, so we still have a long way to go. But in regards to next year, and like, how do we feel about the matches? We'll go back training in October and November, and we're all looking forward to it already. And that's the first time ever. You know, we're not in Division 2A again. And no disrespect to the teams we're playing, but we're going to be playing new opposition. We're going to be welcoming Galway. We're going to be playing Waterford and taking on the opposition in Dublin. And then roll on then the Lee McCarthy in June or so. And, you know, we think we could have Kilkenny at home, Galway, Wexford and Dublin. So there might be a lesson or two to be learned along the way, but, you know, it's better to be getting the lessons than not getting the lessons. So we're all hugely already looking forward to 2019. And the thing I, along with looking forward to the matches and improving or hurling against the better oppositions, what it will do there for hurling in Carlow, like hopefully in 2019, will like with young lads having coming into the ground, see Kilkenny, that someone's going to be Marky T. Reading and Killian Buckley, and you know, you're going to be playing against these lads. It should hopefully, please God, do a lot for Carlow hurling. So, you know, 2019 could be a great year for promotion, and hopefully we continue to improve. I think we have a lot of work to do in October, November, December. How we use the ball, I suppose, at that level is very important. Speeding up our hurling, getting our physical fitness to go 70 minutes at that level, and getting, I suppose, the panel. You saw, I think, awfully we're competitive against Galway and we're good against Kilkenny, and then their panel picked up injuries and suspensions, and you know they got a beat and come the end of it. But we need to, I suppose, look at developing 25, 26 players that can continue to sustain the level of effort that we're going to need to be definitely competitive anyway.
You mentioned the preliminary quarterfinal there. Like, I'm interested. Were you surprised by the gap in quality, for want of a better word? Like, was that a shock to you?
It was, yeah. Tell you the truth, I maybe I was a little bit, I don't know what the word is, but maybe I was a little bit poor in my thinking that we actually could go up here and give these lads a rattle. I don't know. They got a run. You thought keep the game tight at the start of the game, and they got a run. The goal at 30 seconds, a pure nightmare. But they got a run, and you know, fair absolute respect to Limerick. I think the New Zealand said. I remember New Zealand coming out in the World Cup 10 years ago and saying, you know, respect to someone is giving your 100%, and if it's beating them by as much as possible, it's beating them. But that's never letting up. And I think that was Limerick that night. Like they showed us where they're at and where you need to go. So, simple things happen. I think we were down 3 players after the Joe McDonough final, between just Hall has been booked and a couple of injuries we picked up in that, and we hadn't the squad built up, I think, and losing one or two key players in certain areas didn't help us. But when Limerick got a running, and hurling is funny, like if you play the football match, like I said to you before, you can get men behind the ball and just slow it down and keep the score down, but that ain't the case in hurling. The ball travels 90 yards, so 10 points can come up in 5 minutes. But it was a big learning curve, and I'm sure when we look at it in October or November and look back at the video analysis, like it'll do an awful lot for us to see how they create space and how, like, we hurled very well in the Joe McDonough. I think if you talk to any of the teams there, like, it was the best Carroll team they've faced in a long time. How we used the ball, how our forwards, the high scores we put up. But everything went wrong that night. We didn't take scores, and I think Limerick hurled very well. And then the Brown 5 subs, and they're all dying to get on the team because for the following week, Kilkenny, and you know, they all made a big impact when they came in. So it was a big learning curve, but you know, only respect to Limerick for showing it the curve that's there.
It's high, it's dropping in. The goal! Yeah! And the sides are level. We're supposed to have impartial journalists here around us. That's the cheer you have from all of them. Colin Walsh steadies himself, takes the kick, and the ball goes over the bar. For Monaghan takes the kick, ball drops in high. Yeah! Watch, and the ball is over the bar. And they're now leading by 3 points. 3 points separating the teams here.
Up the back door.
And the kick out will come.
He's going to go for a kick. That could be a tremendous goal if he lands it. Does he land it? He does. He sends it in.
So I think we're agreed that the Joe McDonough teams should be promoted to the All-Ireland. But is there a level of fear there as to what might happen to them when they do?
Evidently, yeah. Like, I mean, they definitely should be. And like Paul made the point that it'd be good to, you know, get that test and ask those questions. But you do kind of need to preface it and be very aware going into next year that the gap, as P outlined himself, is very evidently there. And that's going to pay out on score wars and in games. Like the Offaly took a couple of hammers this year. I don't think that's going to change next year. Which, like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what that means for them. Like, how much are you going to learn from that, or what do you take away from it? But at least
that's my concern with the system at the moment, is that there's no real long term progress. So what's going to happen is there's four teams in the Leinster Championship that are miles ahead of everybody else, and that includes Offaly at the moment. Then, you know, Offaly get relegated, Carlo get promoted, go in there, get a good few hidings next year and play four championship games and go down, you know, and then they'll probably get relegated from 1B in the league as well. Then they're back into the kind of situation that they're in this year again. They've got it. It's great that they had that experience, but they're not. There's no chance to sustain. I talked a few weeks ago about the possibility of maybe having a six-team Leinster Championship that doesn't have relegation at least this year. Maybe it does then, and at least then Carlo have the chance to maintain their status. They, you know, maybe they beat Offaly or, you know, or whoever it is, and you just get that. Like, I don't know if Carlo get any use out of getting hockeyed in the Leinster Championship one time and get relegated, whereas if they're doing it on a regular basis, they get 2-3 years under their belt, they get that one big championship win that really lifts them, and the rest of the games don't matter. The standards they'll rise to. You talk to like people from like kind of lower club level when they go and join the county, it takes them 2 or 3 years, no matter how good they are, to get to that standard because they've never played it before.
Yeah.
So you have to play against Kilkenny and Galway, you know, for more than once or twice before you actually, your standards are raised.
I agree with that, but are you not falling in the trap of like just being focusing too much on Carlo? So say there'll be other teams in the McDonagh Cup, like Antrim, for example. Like, why should it be shut off to them?
No, I'm not saying it should be shut off. I'm saying that maybe for the first year you make a six-team Leinster Championship, you don't relegate Offaly, and then everything else works out the same. There should be relegation next year, but I'm saying, and then maybe Carlo still got relegated, but they have a fighting chance.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, that's just one suggestion, you know? Yeah. And because, to be honest, the Munster Championship's a lot stronger than Leinster at the moment, so it doesn't really bother me if the Leinster teams have an extra game, because it's an extra day out rather than, like, the Munster teams are still kind of coming in, have more battle heart, you know, with more miles in the clock, I suppose, having had four massive finals, plus, if, you know, before they qualify out of the group, as opposed to kind of three games in Leinster, you know, two and a half big games, you know?
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens there. Now, regular readers of Bulls will be aware that we have been taking our own approach to the kind of a Team of the Week style story this year, and we've entrusted Morris with responsibilities for choosing a rolling All-Star team in both football and hurling. Most contentious. Now, Morris has kind of been given like an auteur kind of status with this, whereas basically it's his word that counts and no one else's at all. But Morris, you have essentially omitted free takers. Is this talk us through your rationale for this?
Well, I haven't omitted free takers. There's free takers included, but I'm not. My criteria is that I won't include somebody purely because of free taking. I don't think that is enough. Like that one-off specialist who's carried because they convert frees and does nothing else. I don't, like, if I had my way, you know, if a ball gets kicked in and somebody gets fouled, like, so you pick up the ball in the 45, you carry, you get hacked down in the 40 minute, and a free taker comes on and converts it. That shouldn't be the case. You should just take the free yourself.
Why?
Because, like,
but you've been fouled. Your team has been wronged. Something wrong has happened to your team outside the rules of the game. Why should that, like, that's a massive flaw with basketball, is that they finished the game by, like, just, you know, fouling Hack-a-Shaq, it's called. Like, so when it was Shaquille O'Neal, bad free throw shooter, foul him at every chance to stop the clock and he'll probably miss the free throw and then you get the possession back.
But so
it's a terrible idea.
If you want to dedicate a free taker and let him take it, then should that go towards, you know, like, top scorer charts, or then suddenly it becomes, like, it's like this human psychology thing where you, like, these standout moments, like a good free taker gets hailed for having a good game, and oftentimes they don't. Like, it's not a criticism of that. Like, the classic example is somebody like Conor McManus, who was unbelievable last week. But before that, from play, Conor McManus, I think it's something like 3 points. So that's against Laois, Fermanagh, Tyrone. You know, he scored a screamer at the end of Tyrone. But I actually haven't played that well. He's the one from the sideline. But if you're looking in from the outside and you're looking at free taking stats, you say, oh, he's having a great year. Which, after the Kerry game, he's been brilliant. But, like, I'm not... This isn't criticism of Conor McManus. I'm just trying to use this as an example of that. A lot of times, people can massively over-exaggerate the importance of a free compared to just general play. You know what I mean? Like, the the idea that somebody who converts frees had a good game because they converted frees, like, that's one minuscule facet of.
But it's not minuscule though. I do agree with you. Like, I mean, we're having a joke here. Like, he's making a decent point here. Like, that we do look at, oh God, he got 14 points and, you know, that's incredible. Whereas sometimes 8 of them might have been freebies. But literally, like, yeah, in a free. But, you know, one person has to have the balls to do it. You miss a free, Ronan O'Neill does it at the end of the game. Oh. And we talked about this already. Like, probably gets far too much criticism for it. Me and Gavin, not particularly fond of his technique of kicking the ball 44 miles into the sky for accuracy, you know. But, you know, you step up and you do it, you get the criticism. It is part of the game that, like, if you look at, like, in hurling or whatever, like, TJ Reid, you know, you have him over the ball, you feel comfortable about it. Clare, since Peter Duggan has started taking frees, are like a new team. Because we had Colin Ryan in 2013 when they won the All-Ireland. He kind of falls off. Unbelievable free taker. Basically, his frees won the All-Ireland semi-final that year against Limerick. And then they struggle for free takers. David Reedy's hitting them, McGrath's hitting them, Tony Kelly's hitting them. And then Duggan comes along and suddenly Clare are like a different team again. They're motoring because they have the confidence that if you win a free, you're going to score a point. It makes such a massive, massive difference to a team.
It's so, like, it's that actually, that what you just said there perfectly encapsulates my point. Like, I don't, say if you're looking at that Tyrone Dublin game, like, okay, O'Neill, it was a bad miss. But if anybody, particularly as management, if you came out of that game and saying Tyrone lost that game because O'Neill missed a free, like, it's such a terrible takeaway. Tyrone lost the game because they didn't push up until they were 6 points down. Like, there's a whole host of other reasons that their key players were taken out. They got their matchups wrong, so Peter Hart wasn't in the game, Miles Sutton wasn't in the game. That's where Tyrone lost the game. Like, the fact that it's you know, like, recency bias, one big moment at the end of the game, he misses a free, and you over-exaggerate that in your head. But in reality, it was just, all that it was like, even then, they would have been a point off. But in itself, like, Tyrone's big problem was that from between 2015 and 2017, their free taking was terrible. So they converted something like 65% of frees in that year. But that actually has come up massively this year. So Tyrone don't have a problem with free taking. Their free taking is fine. That's not where they lost the game. They lost the game because they didn't push up properly. They didn't get matchups right. They were really reluctant for the first 40 minutes of the game. That's where the game was won and lost. There's nothing to do. The free was just one, like, minuscule mistake amongst many other mistakes. But we, like, humans, like, and it's not like, I'm not saying we is in this room, like, it's human beings massively over exaggerate these kind of individual mistakes because they're so obvious and so apparent to us that, like, it's like, you know,
I still think though that having a high score, high conversion rate in your frees is probably a characteristic of the best teams.
Massively, but Tyrone have that. Like, O'Neill's mistake, Tyrone's conversion now is, like, it's up, it's over 80%, I think.
Yeah.
Like, so it's great.
I have stats, right, because we've been talking about this for a while. So when we got on to our weekly stats, I'm sure, official statistics partner of the GEA, I wanted to know this, right? So percentage, this is in the football championship now, percentage of scorable frees converted for each team left in the championship, okay?
Okay.
Who would you say is top of that?
It's Dean Rock. Oh, sorry, team, Dublin.
Yeah, and it's Dean Rock it's taking Dean them Rock, all, yeah. 90%.
Yeah. Right?
Dublin are the best team in the country, but they win and score the frees that they get. It's a massive, massive deal. You're right about Tyrone. They're third. Galway have 83%. Tyrone have 82%. Roscommon, 78%. Donegal, 76%. Kerry, 75%. Monaghan, seeing as we're talking about McManus, 69%. You know, so you're probably like, I mean, you do make a fair point there, is that, like, not only are we saying, oh, he got 7 points, he's had a good game when he might not have done anything from play. This is before he gets 1-6 from play against Kerry in an All-Ireland semi-final, quarter-final, by the way. So it's a null and void point now. But he's probably missing a few frees as well.
Like,
you know, he's not
Kildare
even getting them all.
Game,
like, yeah. And Kildare down at 58%. And if you look at the difference, like, the difference between Dublin scoring 90% of their frees and Kildare scoring 58%, it's a massive, massive deal to have a solid, dependable, and in Rock's case, like, once in a lifetime standard free taker.
And what, like, to build on that point, the biggest takeaway from that, like, you talked about Dublin at the top. Somebody like Dean Rock. Dean Rock's contribution in play is massive. What he does in game as well as frees. The same with Galway's. It was Barry McHugh. Barry McHugh's been dropped. Shane Walsh takes free now. Shane Walsh's in-game contribution has been huge as well. Like, that's... So it's not like... It's not a bias against free takers.
But being a free taker can hurt you as a player as well. If you look at, like, there's been a load of examples over the years. Joe Canning probably being the best one was when was it Jason Flynn that went and took over from Freeze for a year for Galway? It was Flynn, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And like, it was like Joe had a new lease on life. He was freed up from that pressure. Ended up going back on it, I think, 6 months later. But like, again, he's playing some of the best hurling of his career, you know. But like, Tony Kelly, when he was just not hurling for Clare when he was on the Freeze for a season last year, you know, in the championship, just was not himself. Much, much better player, much freer off them. It's a big responsibility. I feel like that. I completely take your point about not giving too much credit to a free taker. They've got far more opportunities than everybody else. But it's a hard job, and you're putting yourself out there, and it really, really is such a high responsibility.
Maybe I have been guilty of like downplaying the role of a free taker. But
you've
like,
nearly ground him down here, mate.
But the point is that like the. I think it was illustrated best by the games of the weekend that these one-off facet specialists, like guys who do one thing really well, there's no space for them in the game anymore.
Are there
really.
Many of them left, though?
I was going to ask about free takers. I don't think so. Those
kind of players are often found out because what will happen is, if, say, for example, you've got a specialist corner forward who's brilliant at finishing but doesn't have it less, he's going to be on a cornerback like Owen Bang Gallagher or like Owen Merkin, who's just going to pull him out the field, and he can't track because he doesn't have those attributes of his game to contribute in that way. And he ends up looking like a really poor player, but maybe he isn't. But those, like, one facet specialist. So there was a time when a lot of teams carried free takers. Like, you would include the player based off purely off his freeze.
Mm.
Whereas now you can't do that anymore. Like, you can't, and you shouldn't, nor should you, because of the way the game is gone. You know what I mean? So if we, like, you can't over-prioritise freeze when there's so many other facets that a player has to be really, really good at for to be like a competent player.
Yeah.
Who's the most famous carried free taker?
I mean, I have a very Jonas view of this, but I think Porrick Davis of Longford. I mean, that might have been a bit unfair, actually. Davis might have been good in open play. I never really brought my 9-year-old analytical eye to Gaelic football.
I wonder, did they ever really exist? I always got the impression that we were told it's a kind of a lazy fans attitude. And you're certainly not that. I'm not saying you are. I'm talking about specific players. That there is, like Colin Ryan for Clare, for example. I mentioned him earlier. Like, Colin Ryan against Limerick that day that I mentioned already was one of the best free taking performances you ever see. But it was probably one of his best games in open play that I've ever seen him play as well. And he had that thing where he was solid from freeze, so he was almost an easy target for people. But it was very unfair on him. He was a very good hurler, you know. Jimmy Keaveney's the best example of, you know, in going back a year or two here. But there was Jimmy Keaveney was brought back into the Dublin team by Kevin Heffernan, who told him you didn't have to do anything but take freeze. But he was he knew how good a footballer he was. He knew if he got the ball into him at full forward, he was going to kick it over the bar or score. He ended up, I think he got 3-7 in All-Ireland final or something like that against Armagh in 1977, you know. And like, most of that was from play. You know what I mean? I don't know if we've ever just had a guy. If you're a good enough player to kick a ball over the bar from any angle, you're probably a good, you can do it in play from your hand.
Say for example, right, there was a time when towards the end of his career when Brian Sheehan started ahead of David Moran for Kerry, and I would have said rightly, because he was unbelievable from freeze, and he was never found lacking in terms of starting midfield for that Kerry team. But if you had a player like Brian Sheehan, you couldn't start in midfield because of how mobile, like,
that's
Brian Sheehan
point, yeah.
wouldn't live with the likes of Fenton or Michael Darren McCauley or Conroy from Galway. He doesn't like that kind of mobility that is demanded of a player now. So you couldn't start a free taker like you would have to start somebody like Moran or Jack Barry who Kerry have now. And even if them were good free takers, great on top of that. But you couldn't start Sheehan in this Kerry team because he wouldn't be able to survive in that midfield the way he was. And Sheehan was an unbelievable player. I'm not downgrading him. I'm just saying, in this game right now, you can't do that anymore. Sheehan would have to add another string to his bow to survive now, and that's what free takers need to do.
Okay. So have we come to the conclusion, what, the Dean Rock's footballer of the year?
Dean Rock scored 90% of his frees, pretty great. Can I ask one last question really briefly?
Please, please do.
Because we came off, you said we were negative last week and I was denying it, but just one slight negative point. To Morris's thing there, if Brian Sheehan was a really good footballer, but the way the game has gone, there's no place for him in the team because all he can do is play football. he can't do any of the other stuff. But there is a place for, and I'm a big fan of his, I have no problem here with it, but there's a place for Michael Darren McCauley, who can do everything but play football. Is that not a sign of a game gone away from what it should be?
Yeah, there is, like, I kind of there is something kind of sad about that those kind of players, but then again, like, that evolution happens a lot of the time. Like, you look, there's a lot of footballers, or soccer players, sorry, who, like, were terrific in the 90s, would just not survive right now. Like, it's not, like, I think that's just a consequence of the
game. It's athleticism over skill, though.
I disagree. You know, I think there should always be a place in elite sport for people who can get there by just working their ass off.
Yeah?
Yeah. I genuinely do think that. And I'm obviously saying that as someone who had no talent. I had no work ethic either. The only thing I lacked more than talent was effort. But I do like the idea that if I really, really did work hard,
yeah,
I could have played inter-county football.
That's an absolutely fair point. I'd be with you on that. Yeah.
And, like, Paul Galvin made a great point in his recent column where he said, you know, like, his point was, like, right now the modern game predominantly is about personality over ability, but the best players are the ones who have both. And that, like, it's still, if you still have, like, that, all those attributes of athleticism, like, this is stuff that can be honed and can be trained. But if you still have that, like, raw ability, like, I have no doubt, by the way, if Brian Sheehan would develop that, like, he would become more mobile just by sheer training within that career firm, and it would become, like, a fully functioning modern day player. You know what I mean? Like,
changes so often that, like, Brian Sheehan, we're talking like he was a player from the 90s. He retired 2 years ago, I think.
It's like having Jan Mulby in midfield. Well, thanks very much to Shore, the official statistics partner of the GA, for those stats on free digging. That was a very civilized way to fall out. We're probably going to fall out now again as we look ahead to the All-Ireland semi-finals and we guess the spreads.
But now on the UCB.
The Sunday evening sport results. And we begin as usual with a look at today's GAA results.
But now on the UCB.
McKenna Cup semi-final. Antrim 2-10, down 1-9.
But now in the UCB.
And first that shock defeat of newly crowned Ulster champions Down in the McKenna Cup semi-final at Casement Park.
But now in the UCB.
They were well beaten by Antrim after taking the gamble of resting three of their key players.
But now in the UCB.
Down couldn't compete with Antrim's strong midfield.
But now in the UCB.
The goals that clinched victory came in the second half from Mick Cunningham and Kevin Goff. Antrim meet Armagh in the final.
But now in the UCB.
But now in the UCB.
But now in the UCB.
Now, we've got two All-Ireland hurling semi-finals that promise to be tighter than, a slim-fit Hugo Boss suit of Galway, Clare, Cork and Limerick getting a miserable little one-way ticket out of the championship. So it's time to guess the spreads. We're going to start with Saturday's All-Ireland hurling semi-final at Croke Park between Galway and Clare. We'll give, as Galway are the All-Ireland champions, I think Morris from Galway should get to go first.
I'm going to say, I think it's massive towards Galway. Maybe wrongly. Galway minus five.
Okay.
Right, I was between four and five, so because he went for one of them, I'll say four.
Oh, you've shot yourself in both feet there, Morris, because it's going minus four.
Oh, that's a 2 point. It's gonna be. I'm unbeatable here. At the very least, I'm in a tiebreak.
Oh, we still have that rule.
Minus four, yeah. I think that's fair.
Is it, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're in the All-Ireland semi-final. Clare have only lost to Cork this year. They've beaten Tip. They're playing well. They're playing well for at least 40 minutes a game at the moment. Galway are, like, All-Ireland champions and are brilliant, but they didn't look unbeatable, especially the first day against Kilkenny. I think if they play like they did in Croke Park against Kilkenny, Clare beat them. I think at this stage of the year, that's not good enough. And I think that we're anointing them a little bit too quickly. Ultimately, I would say that I think Galway are going to win the game. And I think they could. There's two things that could happen. I think a tight, close game that Clare could sneak. I definitely wouldn't rule out Clare. Or I think Galway could blow them away. You know, if they click and if you get those forwards playing the way they did in the Leinster final replay, it's just very hard to maintain. They're just too talented.
And but yeah, that, like, in a way, that's kind of a benefit for Clare too. Like, Galway are a sitting target. Like, Clare know exactly what they're going to get coming down that grade. To the extent where I actually looked at it just before we were coming in there, the 2016 team, that Galway team, from 1-15, pretty much every one of those 1-15 will play again this weekend. The turnover in Clare between, like, Brendan Bugler obviously not going to play, Oisin O'Brien obviously not going to play, Andrew Fahey was in goals that day, Shangler was in corner forward. Like, there's still an element of, and this is a positive and a negative, like, of an unknown about Clare. Like, are you going to get the first half months of final or second half months of final Clare? Like, what? That's, that can be, that element of unknown, like, not being able to plan for that element of position, which is something, like, Micheál Donoghue does, like, dramatically. Like, he's so regiment with that kind of stuff. That there's an element that, like, how, what are they going to plan for? Because you don't really know what player are going to turn up in the day.
Yeah. Like, they have played more or less the same team all year, though. I mean, like,
even Hodge, in the National League, they
Hodge came in for McGrath in the second match, I think, and maybe the third match, and started ever since. He came in as a sub against Tip and then has played ever since. And they've kind of swapped around Shane Amore and David Fitzgerald a couple of times. Other than that, it's been the same team in every game. And that's kind of one, like, that's, you're totally right. And they do play differently as well, even with those 15. But they have been there and they've had a good look at them with the kind of season that the way the hurling season has gone. That Clare team have got to know each other and have got to know how they play, which is a very, very big benefit. But also, they are analysable.
Yeah. Mick, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, Clare's first hurling game in Croke Park since the 2013 All-Ireland Final.
Like, yeah, replay.
So yeah. Podge has been back with the footballers actually before he got back with the hurlers. Like, how relevant...
Was he? Oh, for the Division 3 final a couple of years ago, was it?
Was the All-Ireland quarterfinal, wasn't it?
No.
Or was he not in that team?
Clare weren't in All-Ireland quarterfinal.
The football team?
No.
They were, weren't they, in 2016?
They weren't.
Were they not? Sorry, we're pausing there. Sorry, listeners.
No, they never made a quarter.
Are
you right?
All-Ireland quarterfinals, Kerry 2016, Clare 11 points.
Oh, yeah, Kerry went on to play Dublin in the semi-final that year.
Who did Clare beat in the qualifiers that year?
Roscommon, 212-19.
I watched
I remember that, man.
All of this in.
Sligo, 217-113. So now, ugh.
Jesus. Well,
I was going to ask you a question.
No, I'm obviously not the... I try to be, but I'm useless at being a Clare football supporter. I'm terrible at it. But
well, I was going to ask you a question about Clare here, but maybe I'd be better off answering myself.
What were you going to ask me? So I don't know.
How relevant is it that they haven't played in Croke Park since the 2013 final? Or does it matter a damn?
I don't think it matters, really.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I don't think it does. I mean, what matters this is whether they believe they can beat Galway or not, like, you know. And a couple of years ago, they weren't. Again, it was the kind of classic Clare performance of the years in between 2013 and now, of they weren't as bad as you might have thought, you know, because what ultimately Clare were doing was giving teams a good game but not a rattling, and then and then afterwards everyone forgets about the game because the other team won by 4 or 5 points pulling up, and in Clare we remember all the missed chances, you know. And that has been, actually, like, if you look at last year's Munster final, it was very like that. Clare lost by 4 or 5 points, but all I can think about, like, if I close my eyes, is puck outs landing on top of Tony Kelly and him snapshotting it wide, you know, as Cork got free scores for their puck outs. You know, I don't want to go into the weeds here too much, but that's what I mean, is like that was a characteristic of them. And I worry, given what happened in the Munster final, that might not be gone away. And what will ultimately happen is we'll remember a classic between Limerick and Cork on Sunday. Galway will win this by 4 or 5 points. We forget about this game, and I'm there thinking about all the chances that Clare didn't take, you know. So
okay,
that'd be my main worry. But I don't think the Croke Park thing is too relevant.
Yeah, like, okay. Especially given, like, I remember we did an interview with Tony O'Regan on site a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about Galway's kind of hoodoo with Thurles that time when Kilkenny brought them down there and beat them in 06. But the thing was, they had really bad memories of Thurles beforehand. So they hadn't played there for a couple of years, but all their team had bad memories of games there. Whereas Clare have nothing but good memories.
Clare have
a team.
Brilliant record. And even go back in history, like, we have a great record. Like, lost the 2002 All-Ireland Final, 2005 Semi-Final, and I can't think of too many more that they've lost in Croke Park, you know?
Yeah,
98. The 98. No, that was a draw. The third match was in Thurles. So it was okay. and they drew and beat Galway in 99 there as well. So yeah, like, I mean, there's not too many defeats in Clare's history in Croke Park.
So we're both ultimately tipping Galway to go back to the second consecutive All-Ireland final.
Like, that's fair enough, isn't it? Like, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. Anything can happen.
Okay.
And within that as
could
well,
be a draw.
Just like the one thing to anticipate of this game is the matchups. Like, like John Conlon with Dougie Burke is a Ward Gatty round three. Like, that is going to be unbelievable.
Round eight.
Gary Marks-Nerney on Tony Kelly.
I have a pedantry in this podcast today. Sorry,
he meant round three is in their third fight. I'm saying their eighth round in the first fight.
Sorry, I should never
is that too pedantic?
Oh, come on.
Are you sure, Gavin? Okay.
I'm sure.
That's just on that point, like the likes Kelly on McInerney and on the other side, then who's going to pick up Cooney? Probably Dave McInerney. Like those matchups would be great. Like that's that one thing definitely to watch out for.
Yeah. Should go and play Johnny Glynn. I was at the Leinster Hurling final and yes, he came on and made a huge difference.
There's this kind of weird reservation. I remember somebody saying to me recently that, you know, you can't play, this Galway team are too good to play a big man of a forward and, you know, hit and hope. But when it's somebody like Johnny Glynn, it's hit and expect, you know, as long as it works, you keep doing it. Like it's worked for Clare similarly. Like when they go along with have that option with John Connor, and it works. So if you have it, why not use it?
It was incredibly harsh on Connor Cooney getting dropped, though. I have to say, yeah. When he was close to hurler of the year, and he was just dropped for the Leinster final replay. But I don't think it'd be him. Galway no team yet, by the way. It's Friday evening.
Mm, okay, well, listener, you'll probably know that before we do. Let's look ahead to the second semi-final on Sunday. Like, they're expecting nearly 75,000 Croke Park for this, yeah. Cork and Limerick. You think it'll be a classic. Let's guess the spread first and make you're already 2-0 up. So in terms of
a draw,
Jeopardy, we haven't really done this very well. But Mick, if you want to go first.
Morris can nail it and I could get nowhere. I'm going to be 2-2 draw. I will say Cork minus one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd written Cork minus one as well, but I need to win, don't I?
Well, you can choose to lose.
You can choose to draw or draw this one and not get a clean sweep.
It's a moral victory.
He's never lost this game before, Gavin.
Explain this to me. If I guess...
If you get it bang on, we need a tie break.
And
if I don't.
But if one minus one is bang on, it doesn't matter because I'm down anyway.
Yeah.
So I have to go outside minus one. So I'm going to say... no spread.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, you're wrong because it's minus one.
Ah, bollocks.
So. Oh, 4-0.
what a victory.
Knocking him off his perch.
Yeah, in style. That was.
This is like the 2010 All-Ireland final, actually, when Kilkenny, all the talk was 5-0, and they didn't lose. They got absolutely hammered.
This is why the 2 points for spot-on rule is ridiculous.
Yeah, I will hold my hands up.
That's a fair rule, though.
I had minus five, minus one written down. Like, I was 1 point off, and I'm losing by four.
Yeah, but he got them both. Look, I had actually forgotten that we had that rule, so that's why I didn't abolish it.
That's a Mark Farley rule.
Anyway, so Mick wins. Congratulations to him.
Yeah.
Who's going to win between Cork and Limerick?
Who do you think's going to win?
Well, I mean, I'm not here to answer the question.
I'm turning it back on you.
If I was to guess, I would guess Limerick.
Okay.
But I'm not coming
Everybody's leaning towards Limerick. It's funny. Like, they were so good against Kilkenny. They've had one really bad day this year in Ennis that could have been a good thing for them. Woke them up a little bit.
It's also like this mental, like the...
But this is a good Cork team.
25 to 28 points with Limerick at 14 men during that game, like for the majority of the second half, like for the entire second half. Like that first game was such a classic and Limerick was so good that I can totally understand why. I personally think it's a toss of a coin. I wouldn't hang my hat in either of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like a long time ago now, that game. So it was brilliant and all, but you almost feel like this is such a new level now.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, even it was early in the league stage of a Munster Championship, and now it's like we're talking about All-Ireland semi-final in a packed Croke Park. That's going to be amazing, by the way, the green. And I don't know if these teams have ever played in Croke Park together. And just even those colours of the green and red, in full Croker will be class, like, you know.
It's feeding a lot of my mail anxiety, I have to say.
I'm really looking forward to it. I have to say, I hope Limerick win. Cork haven't won All Ireland since 2005. Like, for them, we're in pure famine country, and they've lost they lost 2013 final, 2014. They Munster champions, delighted with themselves, got hammered the tip. They've had loads of anxiety and bad times over the year. Last year, semi final against Waterford, where they got a man, Damien Catalan, sent off and it all collapsed when they thought they were going to do it as well. And it's just, Limerick just, it's been too long a bloody journey now, I think. I think they need to go and do it. And I think Limerick could also be the best equipped team to beat Galway if it comes to that, but we're down the line there anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, even you match. Initially, I was thinking, who do Limerick have that are going to put, you know, the brakes on Seamus Harnedy and Patrick Horgan? And then, on the same time, you're like, who do Cork have that are going to put the brakes on, you know, Seamus Flanagan and Adam Glenn? Like, that kind of suggests a shootout, which is great for us. Like, as neutrals. And then you're like, this, you know, young Limerick team, like nine of that 121 team, and the four lads and fours scored 13 points last week. But then, you know, I was watching the 121 final, the Cork and Tipperary 121 final, and it's like Dar Fitzgibbon was lording it, and Spillane, and it's exactly like these, all these young hurlers are still on 21 and still playing this team. But there's no, they're two really similar team makeups, and teams kind of like, so that's why I'm saying it's so hard to separate them. Like, I'm not surprised it was minus one. I actually think it should be no spread.
we don't know who's going to win, but we are pretty much guaranteed a good game.
You think Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, Cork style, Limerick style, they seem to mesh very well the last time they played. But also, no matter who they play, it seems to be a really exciting game for both those teams. The one thing, though, is it's the semi-final lineup, right, of Cork, fair enough, traditional powerhouse, haven't been there recently, though, with Limerick, Galway and Clare. So you know what the real winner is here, don't you, Gavin?
Hurling is the winner, Mick. But it would want to be a winner this weekend because there's only... Well, this is the penultimate weekend of the Hurling Championship.
Yeah, so, in July.
Yeah, in July. So there's going to be two hurling... only two counties left in the Hurling Championship before the beginning of August.
Ah, I've come to terms with it now. Silly, though.
I'm all out of kilter. That's all we've time for this week.
There'll
Thank
be eight you. Teams left in the Football Championship when only two teams are left in the hurling.
Yeah.
Well, maybe six, I suppose. Kildare and... Kildare and Roscommon are out, aren't they?
Yeah, they are indeed. So we're going to be back next week to review those two hurling games and look ahead to the final round of the Super 8s, which have flown by. Mick, thanks very much.
Thank you, Gavin.
Maris, thank you very much.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're back next week. Until then, goodbye.